So, how's everyone doing?
Good.
Not bad, huh?
Today's not bad.
Not bad.
Sometimes it's bad too, but it's not bad. I mean, it's part of this bad is inside us.
I love the wind. The wind today was kind of...
Yeah.
I stopped at Wilco to get gas up in the hill there.
Windy, yeah. It's gusty.
Very windy, yeah.
The way you live, it whistles over there too. Mm. Incredibly.
Where I live, it wasn't windy.
Oh, on Floyd Hill? Oh, no,
no,
you don't live.
No.
I don't suppose.
Yeah, so today is March 10 and we'll... I'm thinking we read one sutta and we'll study together instead of I contemplate about the teachings, you know, the 12 links a little bit more. I study a lot today, and but I want to discuss some things, so next week we can continue the 12 links. Because today is Gretchen is going to California, her sister-in-law, help her sister-in-law, and Cindy is busy, she have court, she couldn't come. And so I want to us to discuss one of the sutras, discourse on happiness. I think this is the subject that we always study, and we will read together, and then it just come up to me this just about a moment ago. But and this is a quite short sutra, but I think it's very relative and very helpful in our practice. We read it and discuss, and how do you apply this to your life, to your practice. So I think this this quote on happiness is very much related to our practice every day, every moment. I think it's because we, every one of us, looking for some kind of happiness, you know, even relative or absolute happiness. But without relative, there is no absolute happiness. So the happy relative happiness contributes to the absolute happiness. So we will read this sutra and we'll ask you a question. Sometimes if you go to school and teacher asks you a question, I will ask you some questions today. How does this sutra relate to your happiness and your environment around? So we'll invite each of you read a short paragraph and we stop and we share. I think it's more practical when we everyone give a chance to share, you know, once in a while, so we change the environment of study instead of I give you the teachings all the time. You give you a chance to really say what you need to say. Sometimes this will be evoke you some kind of seed that we've been studying and you didn't have a chance to really question it. So because I want to us to be like very practical in our practice, not go too further in like doctrines. We can study different way of study the sutra. We can very academic, you know, I can give you terminology after terminologies, and how is that going to transfer your, help you to deal with your suffering situations. So the teaching of the Buddha is something that is, he said that I teach something that the way you, for you to transfer your suffering. I don't teach you something that academic. And that's how I want to be like very close to the Buddha, you know, in that way. You know, in during the time of the Buddha, there is many teachers that teach academically, and he's a revolutionist. He said, "No, that's not what I want. I want to deal with suffering, but suffering then is happy, is very practical in everyday life. It doesn't matter what kind of person you are, whether you rich or poor, doesn't matter. Rich, they have their own kind of their own rich sufferings, but poor, they have their different kind of sufferings." You know, for the poor people, they suffering for to find way for out for food. But suffering and rich people, they find way to preserve their money. This is suffering, fear of loss, and fear of gains and loss. And the poor people, it just they all they do is deal with is their everyday food, their survival. And so I think when I contemplate on the happiness, I It doesn't matter. The rich people, they want to have some kind of happiness. And the poor people also, they want happiness and joy. So I will read the first paragraphs and the introductions, and I will pass on. So I don't want to our studies to be very philosophical or very academic, you know, something that's related to everything, to help us to be live happy and joy, and to be close, you know, to share the things that we need to share with our loved one, you know, maybe your husband, your wife, your friends, your neighbors. And my neighbor just brought me down cake before you came. His wife said, "Oh, you should give this to Antonio." And see, he's been about food. It's okay, see. And we live very harmony with the harmonies. With the children, with the neighbors. And I give them food, you know. And just food, but love, you know, really give. You don't just say like for communications, but you really share your heart. So I will read the introductions, and you can turn to page 270. Discourse on happiness. And sometimes we read it, but we don't really go into detail and discuss that. So I will start reading. I heard these words of the Buddha one time when the Lord was living in the vicinity of Savatthi at the Anathapindika monastery in the Jeta Grove. Late at night, a deva appeared whose light and beauty make the whole Jeta Grove shine radiantly. How do you say that word?
Radiantly.
After paying respects to the Buddha, the deva asked him a question in the form of a verse. Many gods and men are eager to know what are the greatest blessings which bring about peaceful and happy life. Please, Tathagata, will you teach us? So Tathagata is another name of the Buddha. So normally people call him Tathagata, which means no coming, no going. So some of the terminology here. So can you read the next verse?
Okay. This is the Buddha's answer. Not to be associated with the foolish ones, to live in the company of wise people, honoring those who are worth honoring. This is the greatest happiness.
Okay, so can we share on this one? No. To not to be associated with the foolish one and live in the company of wise one. So who is the foolish one and who is the wise one? So we have to ask ourselves that thing. So
I guess the wise would be the ones that recognize their own being for what it is. Foolish could be projecting something else out, not being really who you are. Foolish as in maybe trying to be something else than you are not.
So in the community, who you, why... is there any specific character for Buddhist one and wise one? Or any?
The foolish ones be the ones who are victims or slaves of their attachments and desires. And the wise ones, the ones that accept their attachments and desires and what they are.
So there is no specific definition of it. Because it depends on the occasions too, right?
Yeah, I was thinking that that's putting labels on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
you see.
And everyone has something to teach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So...
one many times, so you maybe shouldn't be hanging out with me. I'm not sure what to do with myself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, everybody's on their own path. Whatever the path is might look to me foolish. Not really. I try not to judge it. But, you know, and it might not be so foolish for them because this is what they need to do at that moment. So I think it's you can't attach a label like that that easily. Yeah. It's so individual.
For me, maybe that's what it comes back to is what ends up being foolish for me. When I go out and hang out with these people at this time, when they're acting this, you know, if it's drinking or if it's some, you know, if it's hanging out with people who are not, who I then come home and feel yucky about myself or whatever because of what my own behaviors that I chose to engage in with that, does that, maybe that's part of what, you know, is it part of how my own experience of that situation, is that teaching me what I need to do?
Because there's poorest moment in our life.
Mm.
Even not the wise, you know, like not the like the person is awakening 24 hour, right? No, we don't, that's acceptance.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm listening. Sorry.
Because when we talked this, I was thinking relate to our study of trolling. The first one is ignorance, but I forget that. So that's why the reason I want to discuss on this is because relate to our topic when we'll talk later, because relate to the first link about ignorance we'll talk about later. So this is, I just want to bring it out. So it's bring it out to share. I want to share the practical experience first, and when we talk later, so it's. Make more sense. So yeah, there's in us there is a moment that we are making a foolish decision, and are not knowing.
So if he's talking about yourself, the foolish one within you and the wise one within you.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe what you said, Lisa, about when I go home and feel yucky. that's not a behavior I want to continue to do.
Mm-hmm.
And honor that side of me that feels good when I come home. And not that I'm going to judge myself or criticize myself when I feel yucky, but because there's no sense in beating myself up over it. But at the same time, it's like focusing on positive seeds. Honor myself when I feel good, and just let the rest of it. I mean, be aware of it, but let it go.
So you have this here is, excuse me. Yeah, you have to accept them both.
Mm-hmm.
Both is within you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the negative seeds is in you, and at the same time the positive seeds. So you try to be honoring the positive seeds so that you can be continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you help the energies to move on. Instead of like honoring the negative seeds. But many of us, we keep wanting the negative seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just coming back, hunting it. Just for example, like one people just say one word that really hurt you, and then that's just keep hunting. Just come back and hunt it, just words. So it's like a knife. And that myself experience that, you know, when I do some stuff and people don't like, and they just, you know, use harsh words on you. And sometimes you try to, you know, and practice and try not to think about, but this is coming back, you know. You don't want, but it's coming back. So the practice is, you know, mindful. You know, the best you can do is be mindful when you see that, aware of that feeling in you. This can be fire in the heart. and you can feel tense in your heart, your chest. You feel that in your body, right? So honor those who was to be honored. And sometimes you have to be honest with yourself, honor yourself, you know, aware of yourself, like you did, you know, today, you know, that I did something good for me, and you feel happy in turn. And for example, you might give a positive thought, just only a positive thought, and that's it. You will feel honored that instead of, you know, many, give rise to many negative thoughts, many judgmental judgments, labeling. And especially in our society today, you know, there's a lot of labeling. Everything we go, we do is labeling. You can see that. And that keeps watering our seeds. We keep exposed to that. That's just worrying. So the practice is to be aware that, you know, there's a lot of labelings in our societies. And especially when you study psychology, you can see those a lot labelings. And when just one people do one mistake and you just label that, especially children, you know, bad boy. And that's turning to the seeds. And see, and then even the boy is not have the ability to able to get out of that trap, and he say, he thinks that I'm always bad boy. And when we grow up, and he say, that's the label. And maybe bad girl, you know, stupid girl. Just because of our unmindful, and we say that, and that hurt a lot to the everyone who we talk it to. So that's kind of a foolish there, a foolish. So the wise people, they know what they're saying, that not hurt other people, right? But because our strong habitual patterns are that seed, and we have a, it's very easy to say it's bad thing. Very easy to give rise to those thoughts. It's just like automatic. You know, if we see something that we don't like, and it's almost popping our head. I don't know what about you, but that in me, I see that. And yeah. I don't know. it's that, but as long as we, that's why I, as I told someone earlier, we have to, Steve, earlier, that we have to make our, strengthen our mindfulness so that we can see that when it's arise, when it, right way. That is the difference. That's the difference between wise and foolish. I think that's the difference. They can, the wise can be stopped right away because they have sharp mindfulness and they're able to put to rest the negative thoughts before it takes actions. It's going out into world. That's the wise. And that is innate in everybody. Whether you have, whether we have strong or not, you know, this, that kind of mindfulness is strong or not, or weak. That's the difference between the wise and the foolish. I think that's the difference. So as a wise, we try to water the strength, the mindfulness every day, every moment, not every day, but every moment in our life. So when we arise into situations, we don't jump into like reacting our ways, you know. We have a moment of contemplation, a moment of seeing. So that's the first moment of seeing. That is the moment of awareness, really clarity. That's the first. There is the, at the first thought, there is no judgment at the first thought. But when thought coming, judgmental coming, that's where create the difficulties. So how I see and how I experience that. So this kind of sees the wise or the foolish, is all in us, all in us. Whether you are, it's regardless of race, regardless of skin. So So if those moments happen to us, we honor that moments. Otherwise, the moment of clarity is the moment of very mindfulness. That's how I look at this here. That's why we should be honored that. So the more you practice, the more you see this very sharp and very instant. So when we study this, it's not outside us, but inside us. That's the reflection. So if you keep honoring those moments, keep nourishing, keep nurturing those moments, and that is the moment you should be honoring. And that is the moment of greatest happiness. That's where the Buddha first glimpse of enlightenment, of great happiness. And that happiness you cannot buy. No, even you, the richest, Bill Gates, cannot buy that moment. So I think that is the greatest happiness we was talking about. Greatest happiness is the moment you be able to aware of your own words, your own thoughts, that give rise to that moment. So this for since for this first paragraph we can look at at the relative level, and we can look at the absolute level, and we can look at the external and internal. The first one. So where do you find foolish people and wise people?
Everywhere.
Even in the best community, in the best environment of practice, you can still find this to people, because there's all kind of levels of in the communities of practice, even in the community of the Buddha, Sangha. There is people that misunderstood his teachings. You say, and you can read in this book. There's people that there's a his disciple. Okay, we move on to the next paragraph, next verse. Steve?
To live in a good environment, to have planted good seeds, and to realize that you are on the right path, this is the greatest happiness.
To live in a good environment. So where is the good environment? Can your house be a good environment? Because your house is where you plant a lot of seeds, you spend a lot of time, right? So when we say environment, we thought it's very big. Generally, we thought very big environment. We never think that our house is a big environment for us, because that's where you spend a lot of your time with yourself and with your families, with your friends. In a community like us here, you spend very little time. You know, like maybe once a week, sometimes once a month, and that's not very much, right? So you should consider your house is the best environment where you can, and how you and how you nurture your environment is up to you, right? It's up to you. And your environment can be dirty, can be a mess. And there's not a lot of space. But your environment can be a lot of space. It's up to you whether you, right? It's up to us. And that's where you plan a lot of good seeds or best seeds, right? So where else do you think that is a good environment?
Maybe where you work. Because you spend time there at your job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nowadays, you spend at the workplace 8 hours or more if you're a full-time worker. And this environment sometimes can be hell. Yes. If you work in a place that you... Some people, they work in a place and you never feel happy. Because we have varieties of consciousness. So how can you create your working environment to be a good environment? It's require a lot of work and a lot of different mind, because you know, for example, you work in school, you know, you have children, you have a principal, you have you know, all teachers, all kind of all people, all kind of minds, all kind of consciousness. Then it's hard than your house, right? Your house, if you are parents, both parents, and then you can create a good environment for yourself and for your children, that is easier. But a community, what about the communities? It's an environment also, right? So we need to have many minds to put together. So it's become a collective mind, because collective is many mind, many consciousness working together. So can you share some of the experience in this kind of environment? How do you plan with seeds?
See sometimes how the environment is what it is, and it's how I approach myself as the environment, whether it's good or bad. When I first started teaching, I was very resentful of it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't what I was passionate about. It wasn't what I enjoyed doing. Mm-hmm. So going to work every day was awful for me. It was not the place I wanted to be, but in the same job, the same building, basically the same co-workers, having a different outlook on it allows me to, I think, call it a good environment now. Whereas the environment didn't change, I was the one who changed around the environment. Mm-hmm.
I think that peace is every step statement has been affecting me more as I think about, you know, how that every step is our path. That everything I do, I was thinking of the environment as the car sometimes. You know, what do I choose to listen to in the car? What do I, you know, mm-hmm. how do I drive around other people or talk to my kids or whatever? So that piece to me is a part of what I bring to every environment, or what every environment means to me. And then I just think back to the Eightfold Path too, that if we are bringing right speech to our environments, right action, right thought, and all this right intention, that we are a part of our environment. We can't separate ourselves from it. So if we're adding that to the mm-hmm. environment, it can only get better.
Mm-hmm. Reminds me of the song lyrics, "There's no place like the right time." But, you know, just because it's a church or a monastery or whatever, it doesn't mean it's a good environment. You know, mm-hmm. it changes, it's fluid, right? Impermanence. But I guess to me, you know, that these first two paragraphs are basically saying the same thing, is mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. Like Steve's saying, yeah, you can change your mind or change your outlook, and that can make it easier to deal with a bad environment. But if you're in a good environment, it's going to make it a lot easier for you. And I think that's basically kind of know, it's the discourse on happiness. What's the easiest way? Mm-hmm. The easiest way is to be in an environment that's good, mm-hmm. that has wise people, mm-hmm. and not an environment that has unwise people.
So at the beginning, it's really important to have a good environment. So as we progress further on the practice, mm-hmm. then we need to challenge our practice. So if you are always in a good environment, and how do you know that you are, how strength, what, how much weakness, or how much strength you're able to endure in situations?
You know, there's not always a good environment, you know. There's always, like you said, it fluxes. So even if you have the physical given mm-hmm. part of enough food, enough heat, a house mm-hmm. over your head, you know, mm-hmm. Things will happen, mm-hmm. you know, with your family if you grow up, mm-hmm. somebody doesn't treat you the way you want to be treated, or mm-hmm. somebody dies early, or these things. So I think even if you have a physical given good environment, you still have to deal with it. Yeah, I think you need to find, there will always be not good environments, mm-hmm. and that, but you find your strength through that. It's definitely related to that. Without it, I don't think you could know what mm. it means to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. No.
So the Buddha said that in order to experience happiness, yeah. you have to experience suffering. And I don't know, it's relative to me, and then I think that because if you don't experience, you just live on, you know, whatever, just all good all the time. Then one day you go out into the, and you don't really experience suffering, then it's really hard to experience the happiness, the value of that.
Mm-hmm.
And especially we live in a society today, you know, like, you know, children, you know, they mostly, we raise our children mostly in a very good environment, right? Especially in America. And sometimes we take things for granted. And then sometimes we face the storm, and then we don't have the endurance, and we don't have the antibiotics to do.
See, this is where it comes in, what you consider a good environment. I don't think America is a good environment a lot of times.
Mm.
I don't. Mm-hmm. I grew up somewhere else, and I can mm-hmm. see actually the value of where I grew up. Different for you, you know, where you grew mm-hmm. up, but, you know, we all know kids these days, you know, they take so much for granted, like you said. So is that a good environment?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. You know, maybe not, because yeah. you get yeah, everything yeah. if you mm-hmm. if your parents are somewhat, you know, affluent to a relative level. It's that same thing. If you don't really experience suffering, although they will experience suffering to the children, just very different,
mm-hmm.
and it's more hidden, I think. So it comes out different ways
yeah.
than immediate. So yeah. I don't know. It's a good environment. Well, relative. I don't have kids, but I know you guys have kids. No, you know, I mean, it's a difficult balance, I think.
Eloise?
First of all, I'm sorry to be late.
Yeah, that's okay.
And to make Mary Lynn late. For me, too, there's something about choosing to experience the suffering. Sometimes we have what looks like a bad environment, but we close off to the suffering. So there is that part where we have to make, I mean, we can somehow go through things that are tough but not feel them
mm-hmm.
at a deep level. But that there's something about being willing to open ourselves
mm.
to the suffering that's there. You may have said that.
Yeah. So suffering is, you know, always is around us in different level. And are we aware enough, awake enough to see that? And that's the question. Because as a human being, everyone is suffering more or less. Right? More or less some kind of suffering level. Even though you live in the, I think it's the richest, you're born into the richest family, there's still suffering. There's still suffering. But maybe, like, there's many layers to cover it. Just like you just to put many different layer blankets into your suffering. And that's called deny. That's our society today. Deny. That's another phase of ignorance we're talking about. They might not suffer for materials. If you live in a good environment, or in environment here, I mean, if you live in the good materials family, you might not suffer that, but spiritually, they're still yearning for spiritually, because it's not satisfied.
Ty, what you're saying makes me think of teaching experience that I had. My first 2 years of teaching, I was in South Texas on the border of Mexico, and I was teaching kids that were very, very poor. They lived in homes with dirt floors, but they had that spirituality. Their families really valued education. There was a tight, cohesive family unit. And then I came back to Colorado and taught in Highlands Ranch for 10 years. And it was so different. And just like you said, these kids had everything. But there were students who so wanted that they would come before school just to talk, mm-hmm. you know, just to have, like, connection to a person, because they didn't have that. They had things. Mm-hmm. And it was just so sad to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I can really see that difference.
Yes. Because they're suffering of love.
Mm-hmm.
Their parents might fulfill their for good environment, fulfill their materials. They want everything they have. Yes, they want everything they have. But inside, internally, they're suffering. That material does not satisfy, doesn't fulfill their deep longing. And that deep longing, everybody is longing for that. And once that deep longing never feel, you never feel safe. Even though you have on the surface, you are safe from material. But deep down, it can be hurt or can be feel pain in that spot. And we have them, and then we deny. We have the material, we say that we have, and then we never look down in that spot. So it seems like we live in a good environment. It seems like. But deep down, you are not. This is what happened to the Buddha. This is what happened to the Buddha. He lived in a good environment, you see. He's the prince. I think that's the best environment he can have. He's a prince, he wants everything. He got protections, day and night. But deep down, he don't fulfill. So he don't realize that the materials is the path for him. Is that a path for him? And society today, we live in our society, and look on the surface, we seem that we have a good environment. Good environment. We don't have war, but we have small war, you know, different kind of suicides, small. But we ask ourselves a question, whether we are really in a good environment, deep down. You have a question? You have something?
Yeah.
Sure. So that's the question we ask ourselves. How deep can we look into this and see how much, what kind of good environment we have? I think every one of us here on the surface, we have a good environment. Right? We have house to live. It's a good environment. And we have food to eat. It's a good environment. But the question is whether we plant a good seed or not. It's up to us. A good seed here is whether you really have every moment that the moments you give a wholesome thought, but not every moment, right? Not every moment. I myself too. Some days moment that there is many negative thoughts that arise on my consciousness. But on relative level, we have a good environment, right? On a relative level. We have car that is not very junk car. It's able to arrive and, you know, be. So when I'm looking at this, the two would create this happiness. That's only when deeply you fulfill that. Is the greatest happiness. But on a relative level, we have a relative happiness. We're able to breathe in and out. It's one condition to be happy. You go to the hospital, you see that many people still couldn't breathe for themselves. One of our members recently is he's suffocating of asthma. And he'd been in the hospital for like unmoved for 3 days, you know, without unconscious, in a coma for four days. And he told me, I visited him when he came back. He thought that his life already gone. Just only 10 or 15 minutes the ambulance did not come, but he already gone. Just 10 or 15 minutes. He couldn't breathe. And his throat become atrophy. Okay. So the intake of oxygen cannot. So on a relative level, we do have happiness, that we're able to breathe normally. So that kind of happiness can be able to, if we're able to realize that, then we say that that is one condition for us to be happy, right? One condition to be happy. So there is many conditions for us, but there is one condition is very deep down. So when we look at this, we look at many different level of kind of happiness that we have. There is movement of happiness, temporary happiness. But in order to have really fulfill that, we have to have some kind of temporary happiness, moment of happiness. A thought, a wholesome thought, that's the some kind of happiness you should have. You know that you're able to generate one thought, a wholesome thought. And that's where you plant the seeds. That's where you plant the seeds. So the practice is not very far distant. It's in our hand. Do you have any other thoughts on that? Any experience, you know, like personal experience on that?
There was a question that was put to Thich Nhat Hanh one of the retreats, and it was, you know, how much do we, in order to build our compassion, take in, you know, news around the world about suffering that's happening? And Ty, I think, was taught, you know, it was at a really big retreat, and I think he was talking to most of us who are beginners and saying you have to be very, very careful about how much of that you take in, because we can get so paralyzed by that, I think. And it was kind of like what you were saying earlier, it was about how much, I mean, when we're starting, we need to protect our environment more. Mm-hmm. And then as our practice builds, we can challenge ourselves.
Yeah.
But for me, it comes down to, like, if I've been listening to the news all day, and I start to go, whoa, I am like, you know, it just drains.
Yes.
And so having, you know, like making myself go over and turn off the radio, you know, turn, just getting, it takes strength to actually do that because it becomes a habit to listen, have the noise in the background or whatever. And, but to see, to be aware of how that's draining is interesting. And I was also thinking about during these times, the economic times that we're in, how the interconnectedness of all of us is stronger, and how even if my physical situation is still in decent shape, that all the kind of stress, the greater stress that is happening around the country and is happening still within our houses, you know, because everybody's feeling it at some level, that all to me too is how to, I felt the weight of that, I think, more lately, and how to continue to bring, if, you know, to deal with the guilt of having enough, you know, when other people don't, and all that kind of stuff. That has been an interesting piece that fits for me with this.
When you said turning off the TV or the radio, I was listening to satellite radio, and it was an old rock and roll station yesterday. And I was listening to it, and I thought, all of a sudden it just dawned on me, I have always described myself, one of the things I've described myself as, is an incurable romantic. And I realized as I was listening to this radio station, all the words of all the songs from Motown and the 60s and the 50s that I grew up listening to, and I realized, oh, my God. And I walked over and turned it off, because I thought, I don't want to listen to this anymore, because it's contributing to being an incurable romantic, not looking at reality for what it really is, and thinking that, you know, I'm going to end up in a nice house in the country with a white picket fence and, you know, the dog out front and, you know, the Brady Bunch. and it just, yesterday I realized how much all those songs contributed, because I knew the words to every one of them. And I realized, uh-oh. So even though I grew up in an environment that was physically good, listening to all those songs just really kind of nurtured negative seeds over time. Mm-hmm. I can see that now. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see it then, but I can see it now.
But the moment of fantasy is okay, huh?
a moment of fantasy is okay, but not, you know, live happily ever after is not a moment. That's kind of a, you know, that can be a problem.
I find on my computer, I have to be careful of all the political stuff, all the stuff that's coming in. Just stay away from it right now, because there are other people who handle it differently, probably with more distance than I do. It's such a wonder. I'm so glad you talked about that, because it's such a... I've always felt guilty that I couldn't deal with politics the way most people do it. It just has always been something that's been hard for me, and I am learning some things about it. But to give myself the permission to protect myself, it's like a little flower, because this practice, I have a choice. Am I going to continue to live as a weed that's sort of drying up, or can I nourish that little flower and be careful? It's such a good thing, because these days it feels to me as if people are
all like this, and so many of them are glued to the nose and glued to the stuff, and phew, how nice to have permission to. I was talking with someone a little while ago about negative friends. Don't have to be around negative people anymore. I got to take care of that flower. And there may be a day when I can be, and when I can be helpful, that it's okay to take care of me and nourish that part that last week when you said we have all of the tools within ourselves to heal ourselves, my world just went, oh. And that must be one of the tools we have that we can take out and say, I'm going to live, I'm going to protect myself. That statement was one of the most powerful things for me that I have heard in a long, long time. It just blew my head.
Yeah, just there, you know, there, so that we have people to remind us. You know, that's why it's good to, as you say, Matt, it's good to practice in a good environment. So like the wise people. So that's what they do, is to remind us. So that the support in the practice. But as we progress on the practice, and we need something to challenge our practice. So we have to see ourselves. So the practice is able to, you have to see yourself. Where you are. Where do you stand on the practice? So it's all go back to the teaching.
I was going to say, this is very helpful for me, what Eloise just said. Because, you know, I taught for 12 years, and then I would say I totally burnt out, and I felt really guilty about that, and that I stopped teaching, and I always saw myself as a teacher, and why did this happen, and that kind of thing. But now I'm looking at it in a different way, in terms of I didn't have the practice then at all. And I needed to be in a different environment. I was so stressed out, I couldn't distance myself from these children and their problems and all of this. And I'm taking time now, as Eloise was saying, to take care of myself and build my practice, because I do see myself someday going back into the classroom. I don't know what that looks like. But it's just good to see it in that way, to say that I didn't have the practice, and I needed to take care of myself. So it's a great way to look at things.
Thank you. Like just like psychologists, for example. You can be a good psychologist, a psychology, but at the same time you can paralyze yourself. Because every day you have to receive and listen to the illness of people around you. Your patients come to you. And you just accumulate that day and day. And then if you don't know the way to release it, you will be paralyzed sooner or later. I know psychologists like that. And if, as a psychologist, if you cannot help yourself, how can you help other people? So the same thing as a teacher or something. So the practice is to be know yourself, as I say before, where you stand as a psychologist. The Buddha is a psychologist. He knows where he stands. He knows what he's doing. He knows where to release himself. Where to let go. Because he had the capacities, full capacity of awakening.
And it makes me think of police officers and prison guards and stuff like that too. Those people need to get permission to take care of themselves. But also, I mean, you guys saying that again too reminds me that when I have the feelings of guilt that I'm not doing enough, that if I can't do it well, it's not going to help anyway. So if I don't take care of myself first, I'm not going to be any good to anybody else, like you're saying too.
So that's going back to the definition of the Buddha. Buddha is three definitions. Tuya, that means self-realization. It's the first definition, the first meaning of the Buddha, self-realization. And the second meaning is other realizations. So after you're able to take care of yourself, that means self-realization, where you stand. And then you can able to reach your hand out. Other realizations. So you help other people to realize their difficulties. But first you have to internalize your difficulties. That's the basic definition of the Buddha. Self-realization, and the second definition is other realizations. And the third definition is completeness of realizations. So you realize your part and you realize the other people's part. So completeness of realizations. Three definitions, basic definitions, meanings of the Buddha. And you see that through his life. First he go out and practice with many teachers and become enlightened, right? He see his own difficulty, even though he's living in the palace. He sees his own difficulty, his own needs, his own journey, his own longing. So we have to take care of his fulfillment. Take care of his own internalize his longing. And then after that he reached out. He reached out to other people. So we as a practicing, we do the same thing. Not the same thing, but in our own way. In the way that very practical, it's very easy for us to reach. We internalize the meaning. And then we internalize our own practice. We digest our own practice. Contemplate on that and see. Contemplate. So the Buddha always advised to always contemplate on our own difficulties. He don't advise to run away, but he advised to internalize. Look deep and see and experience.
Can you say a little bit more in a practical way about how to do that in a meditation, how to do that during the day?
In a practical way, say, if you have an agitation, for example, in yourself, and you have to mean the practice there is mindfulness, breathing, mindfulness of stepping, of walking meditations. And some people is good at use meditation as one mean, but walking meditations, breathing meditations, there's many, many other. So every practice that you practice, you incorporate of the substance of awareness. And my practical ways might be different from your practical ways, right?
Okay.
My practical way is not always is not the same as your practical ways, right?
So when I feel fear,
mm-hmm.
like, yikes, something's going to happen, or kind of a thing, is the practice to say, this is where I am, to breathe with it and to know it?
Mm-hmm. Embrace the way that you... You really aware that you have some fear.
Go to the edge of the fear.
Mm-hmm.
Not throw a blanket over.
No. You're not covered with a blanket. You look at that and you say, just be with that feeling.
And come back to the breath.
Come back to breath. Fear is an energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's an energy. And that energy, you can feel it in your body. It's run through your body.
Oh, yeah.
To your body. Sometimes it can be manifested in a different way. In your hand and shaking, for example. Mm-hmm. And your body trembling is another way. And you feel hurt, pain in your back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's manifest different for different people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say practical different for me and practical is different for you. some people feel nervous when they say they're nervous. They're shaky in their voice. But some people don't show that. They show on their face. Red. Or pale. People, some people fear, they become red. Some people fear, they become very pale. Right? So you know that. So when you know that there is some kind of feelings running through your body and your mind, and there is a practice to calm it down so that you can see. When you are in nervous, you are very confused. Mm-hmm. And you cannot see clearly because you are not calm. So first is to calm yourself so that you're able to see and feel the nervousness, the fear in you. And then after that, you know what to do. After you calm down, you know, I better drink a glass of hot water to warm my body. So that may be practical for me. But your body is hot. If you feel hot in your body, you say, I should take a cold glass of water to calm myself down. But if I'm too cold and I feel that I should need something to warm, eat some ginger to warm my body up. So you know, in that moment, you know what to do with your body and your mind. You don't run away and say, I better, you know, get my blanket and cover myself. Or you don't suppress your feeling. A lot of people suppress their feeling, you know. Feel there's a barrier, there's a resistance. If you don't accept that, you say, that's not me at that moment. And then that many people doing that for themselves. And they don't, and then become sick, and they don't know why they become sick. Because when in your body, if you are not balanced, there are unbalanced chemical. Because when you have that kind of feeling, you generate some kind of chemical in your body, your mind, mm-hmm. and then it's going to your body. So that's why meditation is helping, is to calm and get some kind of calmness, generate that kind of little bit kind of calmness and peacefulness, so that your mind can generate some kind of different chemical to calm and say, I'm here, in a different form, in a form. So that's how is the practice come and help you on that. That's okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's more than okay.
It's great. The other thing that has helped me is, first of all, though, I think you could put a blanket around your fear, right? You could use your breath as a blanket to put around your fear and embracing that. That might be a way to keep the blanket.
You don't want to give it up.
The other thing is to, for me, that's helped because my thoughts are so, they've got such habits, is to question the thought that's leading to the fear. So what's my fear about? What do I expect? And so is that really, that's going back to that, the Byron Katie work I talked about, and those questions about, is this really true? Can I know for sure that this is true? And kind of dissecting the thought, in some ways it can gives it permission to leave, because you start to see that this isn't my fear that this is going to happen. Yes, it might, but it might not. I can't know that it's true that this is going to happen, and that sometimes the energy dissipates on its own.
Yeah, you can use your mindfulness as a blanket. If you use mindfulness as a blanket, then it's good to calm and to take care of like a baby. And if you use your breath as a mindfulness means to calm and to assist you in that moment, then it should be okay. Okay, anybody have any other thoughts? So. Yeah, so that we will share that. We will stop here, and if we will continue to share that. I think it's good to have everybody thoughts and share and really supporting each other, sharing different experience, and that's really, and then it's become a collective insight for us. Because every one of us have difficulty in our practice, more or less. And if you share your difficulty, I think that's also good, but also happiness is also good. Any kind of sharing with authentic in the practice experience, there's always helpful.
I don't know if I shared the 2 days before Thanksgiving, someone in my life who was very, very important, as important as anyone I've ever known, died very suddenly in Boulder. And I have been just reeling, and have been encouraged to go into that grief and really feel it. Just feel that, let it all be, the confusion, the pain, the sadness, the whole thing. And today, I'm feeling, beginning to feel the gifts that are coming to me from that. Unbelievable. This death was even as hard or harder than when my father committed suicide. And I'm just now beginning to feel that there are some incredibly beautiful gifts in it all, just sort of like flowers are blooming. And so I really thank the practice and thank all of you. I know that we still waffle back and forth, but today there's a part of me that says, I wouldn't miss the richness that I have today for anything, even if it meant all that pain. Mm. So I just wanted to share some.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah. Thank you, Eloise. Another thing is I want to mention is last time I shared with Eloise, and sometimes Eloise feel that there is a seriousness in our study. and I was that's okay, you don't mean anything. So I just encourage you to be like this in order to get a good transformation. The practice have to be naturalness. And the environment also, because when we are too much serious or there is some fear, then it's really hard for the teachings to be penetrate itself. Mm-hmm. So the practice is when the best practice is to be like naturalness, so that the teachings can be permeated easily, just like naturalness when you example like soft ground. So the rain can permeate easily. So when your body is soft and natural, and your mind is soft and open, then the teaching is permeated, because we don't want to create a barrier between me or you or anyone. We just want to feel, you can only feel. It's like home. So like home sweet home is like naturalness. So the rain and the teachings can permeate easily. And that's where the transformation takes place. How can the ground is hard, frozen? How can the tree or the plant can grow? It's the same thing in practicing. When your practice become natural, naturally flow, transformation takes place. Just like ground. When the ground is soft, plant grows easily. So when we come to the class like this, it's like open and take yourself, be natural. And thank you for that, because sometimes I don't realize that. So when thank you for your comment. So I just want to share that with everyone. I don't want to put a label on you or anything.
I always feel a little bit on eggshells.
Yeah.
Because I sometimes feel like, am I doing this right? Am I doing that right? Am I doing So
when you have that feeling, you just ask. It's right. Natural is to ask. Because here we come is to learn. We come together as a brother and sister and learn together. if you have experience you can share, you know, and if you feel that it's not right, you can ask, you know, and anything, any people or any friends think they have experienced that, you know. So let's like me, if I don't pronounce the word radiantly right, I just ask, you know. Why? You know, we just, if you want to learn, you have to be open yourself and remove yourself and ego. And that's the only way you can learn. And that's the only way you can take transformations. It's the same thing like sitting meditation. You don't feel very tense in your body. So your body have to be flow naturally. In order to the feeling of bliss, the feeling of joy to settle in.